Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to DogPod, your home for the Big Ten-bound Washington Huskies tackle football team, the original podcast by the fans, for the fans. I'm here with Mitch. I'm here with Law Dog, the Dogs. 4-0, another dominant 59-32 win over the Golden Bears of California, now ranked number 7 in the country with our first-place vote, a single first-place vote in the AP, first time since 1997. All right, this week we head down to Tucson for the last time in probably a long time. Gentlemen, seatbelt buckled, ready to go?
Let's do this.
Okay. It was a blistery day in September Eve when the Bears of California took the field against the Dogs. Law Dog, what'd you see, man?
Remember the days, guys, when we used to lament the slow starts under Chris Peterson?
That's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember that? Yeah. Those days are over, right? First possession out of the gate. Eddie Ulufoscio grabs the interception, runs it back to put the Dogs up 7-0. Cal's next possession, they decide to just punt it away to old Roma Dunze, who's the backup punt returner, filling in for injured Jalen McMillan. All he does is take it to the house, extend the lead to 14-0. Penix doesn't even get the ball until after Cal scores their first touchdown. It's 14-6, and Penix just needs 7 plays to find Jalen Polk for the touchdown. It's 21-6. Cal comes back with another pick, this time by Dom Hampton, and the Huskies tack on a field goal after that, 24-6. Cal goes 3-and-out. Penix, all he needs is 5 plays. That long 44-yarder to Roma Dunze. Dylan Johnson punches it in, make it 31-6. And, I mean, there's more where that came from, right? I mean, It just got out of control in the first half. Cal does come back and drives the field 80 yards to make it 31-12. And then the teams trade a couple interceptions. And then, guys, 6 plays, 48 yards, 3 minutes. 6 plays, 80 yards, 48 seconds near the end of the half. The Huskies go up 45-12 at the half. They get the ball to start the second half, go 88 yards in 7 plays. And, I mean, it was pretty much – the night was pretty much over for Michael Penix at that point. Huskies were up 52-12 with almost 30 minutes left to play, and they would cruise from there. Even though they did give up a couple of junk touchdowns at the end to the Cal Bears, the Huskies really pulled away with this one and end up winning it 59-32 and the talk of the nation.
And so cool to see a lot of these backups and walk-on guys play in that second half. Everybody got to touch the ball. You know, was absolutely incredible. Loved seeing it. Total of 9 walk-ons played, a combined of 58 defensive snaps just for the defense.
That's awesome.
And did you see that another pair of brothers got into the Bruner brothers this time? We're playing side by side at linebacker. So that's 3 set of brothers on the team, which is pretty awesome. And I mean, this is like, hopefully we can ride the wave, guys, in recruiting. They got a couple commitments. Sounds like they had some good impressions with some high profile targets that were on campus this weekend. I mean, DeBoer's got this thing rolling right now.
He does, man. It was a great game to see. Just incredible from an offensive perspective, but really, I mean, the defense coming around, it's just been amazing. But hey, you know, we do have to turn the page this week. So we get 2 weeks before the bye, right? And this is one of those ones like, hey, don't look ahead, right? Because don't look ahead to Oregon coming in 2 weeks and a bye after that. It is Arizona. We've struggled in the state before. This has been a bugaboo for us, even though, look, Arizona hasn't beat us for a while, but the state has been a bit of a curse, right? We've had some close ones when it should have been close, but, you know, let's talk about this Arizona team. Mitch, this is the number one passing offense in the country. They're going to face an Arizona defense that ranks 4th in the pack in points and yards allowed per game, but I think there's more to the meet the eye here in that state. What do you think about this Arizona defense? What do you want to see from our offense?
Yeah, well, let's look back at the last few games. I always like doing a little bit of a retrospective, right? So last weekend they beat Stanford, if you can call it a win. I believe John framed it as a bad win, 21-20. They let Stanford pass for 246 yards. All right. No touchdowns. Stanford rushed for 112 yards and a couple of touchdowns. So, you know, I mean, Stanford guys is really, really bad. And so that is not, those are not, like, I look at that, those defensive numbers, and it's not really that impressive at all. Go back to the UTEP game 2 weeks ago. They beat UTEP 31-10. All right. Again, though, they allow 283 yards passing, average of 8.1 yards per pass. UTEP really couldn't rush the ball, you know, just still a little bit shaky. And then in their loss, 24-31 to Mississippi State, allowed Mississippi State's quarterback, they hold him to 162 yards, but he throws for 3 touchdowns. So what does this like kind of boil up into? I think A, they're playing really bad opponents, right? And B, I don't think their defense is very good, guys. You know, quite frankly, I think Washington should carve these guys up, especially if Washington's run game is truly a little bit on the run rebound here. And I just don't see this defense being able to hold up against Penix and what he can do, or quite frankly, what Ryan Grubb can start dialing up now, right? If the run game, if they could get that going again, you know, they're basically going to take what they give them. And I trust Grubb to make the right calls to say, are we going to let Penix light it up, or are we going to let the run game kind of roll over these guys?
Ooh, you hit the nail on the head there on who they're playing. 120th in the country strength of schedule so far.
Ooh. Yeah.
Right? I mean, so
they're giving up the 7th lowest passer rating in the conference against that schedule. I mean, they're ahead of Cal, Arizona State, Stanford, you know, a couple others. But I mean, they're kind of, I think to Mitch's point, they're not giving up that many yards. If you look at, for example, how many yards Washington is throwing for right now per game, but they are not doing so in a very, and they don't have an interception on the season. So I think when you look at how's Washington going to attack them, it's going to be more of the same. It's going to be, let's air it out.
Yep. Take what they give you. Well, and you know, Jetfish talked about this all last year, is that this was supposed to be an Arizona defense. That was where the emphasis was, that his first year was to revamp the offense and put butts in the seats with a good offense and to get recruits into the building. And that was, he felt like you had to have, was an offense. And this year was, you know, we got to get the defense going. A couple injuries too, you know, we'll talk about some of the offense, but linebacker Justin Flo, the human targeting penalty. He left the game at Stanford. Their nickelback Martell Irby, I think, left the game. So, you know, who knows what happens to these guys, but those are two key players on the defense. But, you know, agree, man, they need to take what is given to them and air this thing out and put these guys away. Should we get into the Arizona offense?
Yeah.
All right, we go. So last
year, as it is,
they were the 6th best passing offense in the country last year.
Yeah, with Jaden Delora.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They're the 6th best this year in the pack.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? 6th best passing offense in the pack. Last year's 6th best in the country. You know, high level, they're giving up 28 points a game. You know, Brent, this is all under Brendan Carroll, the OC. You guys remember that name? He was with the Seahawks for like 9 years, right? So, you know, let's start with Jaden Delora, the ex-Coug, who planted a flag in the Husky field. He, you know, and we want our shot at this guy, right? Let's be honest. And, you know, he had some character stuff I'm not going to get super into, but in the end, I would love to have this guy getting beaten up by our edges. I don't know if we're going to have it happen. Left the Stanford game with what looked to be a high ankle sprain. Enter 3-star redshirt freshman Noah Fifita. So he came in at Stanford, this guy. He went 15 of 18 on a game-winning drive. He's from Anaheim Servite, classmate of Teotihuah McMillan, their number 2 receiver. And the two of them were just an absolute dynamic duo while they were there. One thing I think it actually worries me a little bit is, so Delora's issues, his biggest issue, he holds onto the ball way too long and runs backwards, right? He drops like way deep into the pocket and takes up these big 30-yard sacks. His time to throw rate, the TTT, 3.1 seconds. Fifth, it was 2.2, almost a second faster. So he's getting rid of the ball quickly. You know, so you don't have that edge play that we'd love to see. You know, a couple other things, if you think about from last year and what was a pretty high-powered offense, they lost Dorian Singer to SC. Who I saw Dorian Singer, not even another thing, just like Taj, he's like not even in the top three of their receivers, but he was their number 1 last year. But they still have Jacob Cowing, Teotihuah McMillan. I mean, those guys are both studs, right? Bell cow running back. And on my Pac-12 fantasy team, Mike Wiley out. Don't know if he'll play this week, but it looked tough when he was coming out for, out of that Stanford game. DJ Williams is a Florida State transfer, and Jonah Coleman, they each got about a dozen carries in his absence. Coleman, much more shifty, 6.3 yards per carry. DJ was under three. They also could be missing their starting right guard, Raymond Pulido. So they got beat up at Stanford. You know, if you look at who they have from a talent perspective, they do have a really solid left tackle, Jordan Morgan, who's NFL bound. Could have probably gone last year and decided to come back. An absolute standout. You know, but in the end, I think, what do we want to do with these guys? For, you know, and that is, look, their strength of schedule is 120th. We talked about that. Who are these guys beating? Let's, how about we clean up the penalties a little bit, man? 110, yeah. Michigan State. We lost the penalty battle, 83-10 to Cal. You know, that's sloppy play. You know, if you look at our defense as well, I mean, we talked 7 interceptions after just 4 games. Like, that number could have been, it probably should have been 8 after that other call, right? Yeah. And another pick 6. If that Dixon had committed that face mask penalty on his attempt. I just think it's just take what they give you down in zona, man. If we, like, of course, I want to see establish the run. I love seeing what Dylan Johnson did last week, but let's just take what they give us when we head down there and keep, don't look ahead. You got the bye week. You got 2 weeks to prepare for Oregon. Get that W.
This is where coaching comes into play. You know, I mean, with Chris, I remember with Sarkisian, it just seemed like every year there was a game or two, maybe, that we lost that we really just had no business losing. Mm-hmm. And maybe you won a game or two like that also, maybe one game like that anyway. But we just, you know, it felt like we emotionally were all over the place. Chris Peterson came in and stabilized everything. Every opponent was the best team we'd ever faced. Right. And that's, I think that's the hallmark of a good coach. And DeBoer, I think, I think he has our trust. I think he's going to get it done. And I just wanted to point out, BT, you hinted at it, 7 interceptions. This defense also has the 15th lowest passer rating against in the nation right now. At what point do we start taking credit away from how bad those opposing quarterbacks have been and start attributing it to our defense? Because Boise, 22 of 47. 2 picks. Tulsa, 18 of 32 and a pick. Michigan State, 14 out of 35 and a pick. Cal, 27 of 46 and 3 picks. And I think you got to look up and go, you know, this defense is showing me what we needed to see, which was improvement in the back 7.
Mm-hmm. It's a great point. You know, like, it'll be interesting, Law Dog. I think, you know, this weekend, if that kind of trend continues, it'll be a pass yet again. They'll blame it on Delora or the backup coming in. But where it really matters is if they shut down Knicks, right, in a couple weeks against Oregon. That's right. When it will start getting exciting.
But you're looking ahead, happens. Mitch. You're looking ahead.
So let me touch on that. That's a great point. I really like what you guys were saying. As a fan, I think I can look ahead. But, like, I like all these seniors, right? Like, I think the senior class, like, to all joking aside, right? Like, I totally agree from a coaching perspective. But I think you also need, you know, these fifth-year seniors in the locker room, right? Like, settling everybody down, making sure they're focused on the right stuff. Coming from a peer probably matters even more than their position coach. And, like, looking around that locker room, it just feels like they've got that with Penix, with Olofosio on the defensive side of the ball. They got those guys to say, hey, look, no letting up, no taking the foot off the gas pedal.
Yeah, and look at that defense as well. You mentioned Eddie Olofosio, like, you know, pre-med with like a 3.8. I mean, geez, this guy just amazes me. Having Eddie back, having a healthy DTF. Cam, the step that Cam Fab has made, look back to the Arizona, the UCLA tape from last year.
Yep.
I can't believe it's the same guy.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
Having a lockdown corner, I wonder, sometimes I'm like, is Jabbar Muhammad bored back there? I could, be like smoking a camel in the corner and it's, no one's touching him. You know, I mean, it's unreal. And when they do, he makes an amazing player, makes a pick. I mean, having those pieces is just unreal.
Well, and you got to talk about the health too, because, you know, Olofosio did not make it back until what, early November last season. And we knew that he was a huge player. We didn't think it would take that long for him to get healthy. Here he starts the year fully healthy. He's been an anchor in the middle, right? And then you've got at your secondary, you know, knock on wood, you've been able to kind of keep, I mean, you obviously did lose one starter there already, but they've recruited the position so hard, and they have a lot more depth. And last year, I think, you know, this coaching staff, it's not going to be hard for them to say, hey, remember last year we went down to the state of Arizona? How'd that go? So we need to be practicing like this week is our national championship game. And frankly, after this point, they're all going to be championship games.
That's right. Yeah, they've sold out somehow. They sold out the game in Tucson. There's like 500 tickets left or something. So it's going to be a rocking crowd. Yeah.
Huh?
It has been a house of horrors at times, but BT, I think it's worth, let's go back in the Wayback Machine one time before we do it for real here. The Huskies have won 25 out of the 37 meetings with Arizona over the years, right? And they haven't beaten us since the, what was it? The Deontay Cooper, like fluke fumble game in 2014, right?
I just hate that because he's the nicest freaking guy ever.
Yeah.
I mean, what a Husky stud, head coach of Highline, doing incredible things.
He shouldn't have even been on the field that day. He had three reconstructive knee surgeries, but he wanted to put on the purple and gold for his last season. I don't think anyone harbors any ill will toward the guy.
Right.
No, he's a great, great dude, great Husky. However, that game is going to be the Deontay.
That game was tough.
I'm sorry, Deontay. I'm sorry.
That was a tough game. That was a tough one. Yeah. Yeah. And the state, you know, that's why there's the desert dog, you know, moniker. This has been a tough one for us, but this week, I'm not that worried about it. I think this week, I hate to say, keep your head on straight. I love that. Not only that, as you talked about coaching, but the culture that they're trying to create, I feel like this team is going to have their, you know, is going to do what it takes to get the win and get out of there and hopefully get out of there very healthy. So before we get into the Pac-12 roundup though, let's talk about it. 7 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. That's what you're going to be watching on. Huskies, 18.5-point favorites. You want that 3 touchdown?
Yes. Sorry for the awkward pause. I was just, you know, imagining myself in Arizona basking in the sun, covering 3 touchdowns. Yes.
There wouldn't be much sun at 7:30 p.m., Mitch. Not much sun at 7:30 p.m.
For the good news, though, is I think this is our last appearance on the Pac-12 networks this year. I think. Right? Because I think you are obligated to do 3 or something like that.
You're obligated to do the number of home non-conference games you have. Well, this year for us, that is 2, and this is our second appearance. So we don't have to be on there anymore. But you tell me if that ASU game is going to be in prime time on Fox or something. I don't know.
That's going to make a little run. Mitch, I think I'm with you. If mid-20s, you might bait me into it. But I think the dogs can cover 18.5. Give me the Huskies to win and cover.
I got him too. I was the only one who picked him against Cal to cover that big spread. And I'm actually surprised it's less than 3 touchdowns. It's going to be a tough test on the road, but Penix is on fire. They are cruising right now. And like I mentioned, I'm starting to really become optimistic on the defense. I'm uncertain if Delore is going to play. If he doesn't play, this is an easy cover, in my opinion.
All right, Dogpod fans, before we get into the Pac-12 roundup, we need to get into the time machine with Professor Law Dog. And look, this is the last year of the Pac-12. We know this. And there's so much great history. And we're going to do a segment each week. Last year, you heard about the incredible history of the Cal Bears football team. And this week, we're going to be talking about the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. Class is in session.
Let's go, BT. So last week we talked about Andy Smith, the decade at Cal in the 20s, and how the success of that 1920 Wonder Team was validated by the 1921 Rose Bowl shutout over Ohio State, right? And with this week's game against Arizona, I just wanted to shift the focus a little bit toward the early history of the Rose Bowl itself, provide some context about what it means to college football. And I'm going to mix in a little Husky history as well here, right? But as we all know, the college football playoff is expanding next season to the 12-team format. And with that, there was a lot of pressure when they were signing all these deals and stuff on the Rose Bowl to go along. And the CFP even gave them an ultimatum, right? You either need to join us or be left out. And famously, the Rose Bowl has wanted for years to hold on to that Pac-12, Big Ten relationship that they've held since 1947, right? And the relationship to the PCC goes back even further, 1916. So we'll get there. And they want that 2 p.m. Pacific time slot. It goes with the parade and the whole century-old tradition of the Tournament of Roses, right? And those pretty nice sunsets over the San Gabriel Mountains in the fourth quarter, too, right? But they gave it all up to join the CFP and be modern going forward. But let's go back in the history books a little bit, that first Rose Bowl, it looks like a Rose Bowl to us today reading through it, but it really was nothing like the Rose Bowl today. So the Tournament of Roses began holding this New Year's Day parade in 1890. And in order to bolster the revenue to support the parade in, for the 1902 New Year's Day parade, they sought to tap into the burgeoning popularity of college football and stage an exhibition. So it began kind of as a novelty. The purpose was to just feature a West Coast team against an East Coast power. And so the game was originally called the Tournament East-West game because it was held at Tournament Park in Pasadena. There was no Rose Bowl Stadium. Stanford was invited to play that first game, despite the fact that they played like five or six amateur and semi-professional teams in 1901, right? They were playing, you know, like they weren't playing colleges. But Michigan, on the other hand, led by their legendary coach, Fielding Yost, they were playing what looks like today is kind of a Big Ten schedule. Indiana, Northwestern, Iowa, Ohio State. They went 11-0, and then they cruised past Stanford that game 49-0. They claimed the national championship for that 1901 season. And the game was actually so lopsided, the Tournament Roses was like, well, we're going to try something else other than football next year. So we're going to try, how about ostrich races? So they did a bunch of stuff like
that. You're making that up.
I'm not making it up. That is straight out of Wikipedia. All right. So you got to go back, right? For background, there were no bowl games at this time. There weren't even polls. The polls didn't even exist till 1936, right? And the final polls didn't even really factor in the bowl games until 1968. So this is why there's all these claimed and disputed national champions in all of those years, including Washington in 1960, right? So, but in 1935, three other bowl games began playing: the Orange Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Sun Bowl, and then in the 1936, the AP poll came out. Mm-hmm. So this was a different era. This was a different time, right? This is how Cal was able to claim five national titles from 1920 to 1937. They weren't the only one to claim those five national titles. There are other teams that claimed them too.
Right?
Right, right. But many, many schools have these contested championships, and the NCAA actually recognizes them in a variety of different ranking systems and all that in their record books. So there's the AP, there's the UPI, the Football Writers Association of America, the Coaches Poll, all that stuff. Now, those selectors just award the winner of the playoff to their championship. But back then, you know, this game, the Rose Bowl, was the kind of the only way you could really compare those, the crossover of those conferences, because it was just so much less common. The sport was more regional back then for obvious reasons, right? So obviously a national title prior to 1968 or 1936 is not the same as the one after that, because, you know, we got better and the system got a little better, even though the BCS and the Bowl Coalition and all that stuff were trying to get around those issues. But in 1916, let's go back to the Rose Bowl, they brought back a football game, and it has actually been an annual tradition ever since. So they took 15 years off, but they brought back a football game, and those our Washington State Cougs, our buddies, they won that first annual Rose Bowl, if you're going to start there. In 1916, they defeated Brown, and BT, that is their last Rose Bowl victory in 1916.
Wait. That can't be right. I mean, all that rich Coug tradition, they don't have another one?
I'm sorry. Sorry to report. So the next season, the Rose Bowl begins an agreement with the newly formed Pacific Coast Conference, and they're going to invite the conference champion to play a team from the East. Nice. And so in 1923, the iconic Rose Bowl Stadium was built, and it was modeled after the Yale Bowl in New Haven. You guys have got to check this out and see the pictures, because the Yale Bowl in New Haven, it looks identical to the Rose Bowl. Yale would sue for patent infringement if this was 100 years later. So, and actually wanted to point out, for many years, this was the largest football stadium in the world, right? Built in 1923. And the term bowl, the name bowl, like the Super Bowl, right? It all is derived from the Rose Bowl. So the Rose Bowl really is that, you know, that traditional tide and all this. Hence the granddaddy of them all. So from 1916 to 1947, that's when the Big Ten struck their deal with the Rose Bowl to become the other conference. So the PCC was then playing a team from the East in these 32 seasons. 17 teams that either won or tied the Rose Bowl in those seasons claim national titles. Mm-hmm. And in one game, it was actually both. 1926, Stanford and Alabama tied. They both claimed the national title after the 1927
Rose Bowl. I love it. It's great. They're still talking about it today.
They're still talking about it. Beginning in 1947, though, the game, you know, at this point enjoyed kind of by far the highest profile of any single college football game. It was the first bowl game to be televised. There were other games televised before then, but it was the first bowl game to be televised, and it became, you know, part of the New Year's Day tradition, right? And by the 50s, bowl games were becoming more common. The poll system was becoming more refined. There, it wasn't a national title per se, but it was a very high profile game, and it allowed the Pacific Coast Conference, Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12 to flourish during this time. So sure. I'm going to go back to 1960 and 1992. The Pac-12 won 24 out of the 33 Rose Bowls during that span, including and the Pac-12 claimed seven national titles during that time. Five by USC, and then Washington claims two as well. And they even won 16 out of 18 between 1970 and 1987. So the West Coast was dominant in the second half of the 20th century in the Rose Bowl. And you really can't tell the story of the Rose Bowl without telling the story of USC, right? They played in the first Rose Bowl in the modern stadium. They won the beat Penn State, and they have won 25 Rose Bowls, guys. That's more than anyone else has even appeared in the game. So next are Michigan with 20, Ohio State with 16, and then your 16, University of Washington Huskies tackle football team with the fourth most Rose Bowl appearances, 15 of them, seven wins, seven losses, and one tie against Navy in 1924. So with the unraveling of the Pac-12, the proliferation of the playoff, as you mentioned, BT, the Rose Bowl as we know it will die after this season. It's really already dead. Since the Rose Bowl is going to be a national semifinal this year. But wouldn't it be sweet to get the old band back together one last time? Michigan, Washington, New Year's Day with a national championship on the line. A boy can dream.
Oh, yeah, can I? I mean, I can just taste the cold beverages on the golf course there.
See that sunset sprinkling over the San Gabriel's Beach.
Give me that sunset. I want the $750
injected into my veins.
I want. I'm saving now for the $750 surge pricing Uber ride home that will take me 9 hours for the Uber to show up. I am ready for this. Okay. All right. Let me go through last week, and then at the end of it, let's total up the receipts, Law Dog, and see where we're on the Pac-12 roundup. All right. Here we go. So it was then number 19, Colorado, at number 10, Oregon. Oregon favored by 21. They would win. They would win very, very big, 42-6, and given the press so much fun stuff to talk about. Their coach Dan Lanning just showing he's a real super super neat dude. Here we go. How about then number 22 UCLA at number 11 Utah. Utes favored by 4.5 and a real barn burner there. Utah 14. UCLA would win and cover. How about this? How about this for the start of a game? Here's your line. Pick six on play one. Okay, to start the game. Then we got punt, missed field goal, punt, fumble, turnover on downs, punt, 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 punt. Finally a touchdown. What is going on with these two teams, man? Holy smokes. Then number 14, Beavs at number 21, Cougars, 4 p.m. on Fox. Beavers were minus three. Says Vegas, wrong. It was 38-35. Wazoo, receiver Josh Kelly, three touchdowns. Man, despite 21 points, the Beavs tried to get the old Cougs to Coug it in the fourth quarter and almost Coug, but didn't happen. How about 2-1 Zona heading to Stanford, 4 p.m. We talked about this. Vegas said Zona by 12.5. Nope, quarterback goes out. Close when he was in. Zona wins. Stanford covers. Zona 21-20. Last one, number 5, USC, 7:30 on Fox at ASU. SC favored by 33.5. Again, they get the win, but it wasn't easy. Not at all. No cover, 42-28. SC fans probably didn't like this 27-21 lead going into the fourth quarter. That's the Pac-12 roundup from last week. Wow. Law Dog?
Yeah.
I think you guys were two games back last week. How are receipts looking today?
Yeah, so BT and Mitch both taking a few L's over the weekend. I was even at 3-3, and I pulled a game up. But BT, you still have the lead, 14. I've got 13. Mitch has got 12.
Nice. Okay. All right. So here we go. This is the week. Let's talk about this. Finally, I have to wait till Saturday night to crack a beer. We get Friday night game number 10, Utah traveling to number 19, Oregon State, 6 p.m. on FS1. Beavers by 3.
Man, so interesting. You know, we've been on the Beavs. I've been on the Beavs now for the last like 3 weeks. You know, they're going to pull a pump fake right here, right? Everyone's going to be like, oh, yeah, Beavers at home. That makes sense. I think Cam Rising comes back in this game. I think Utah keeps rolling. I think it's the wrong team favorite. I'm going with Utah. Woo.
Yeah, Oregon State has not covered the spread this year, guys. And I'm getting 3 points along with my Utah pick. Give me the Utes.
I'll take the other side of this, boys. I haven't seen enough from this Utah offense. I don't think Cam Rising comes back this week. I think ultimately that's what this is going to come down to. We're basically, in my opinion, we're making a bet on whether Cam Rising comes back or not. I'd say no Cam Rising. Give me the Beavs to win by 6, maybe 7. All right. Ooh. Saturday. We start real early, real, real early, 9 a.m. on Fox. This reminds me of, I think, that first year that we went out to see you, and it was a 10 a.m. kickoff or something. It was November 1st, the day after Halloween. It was a very interesting walk through Greek Row. Saturday, they start real early, 9 a.m. on Fox. It's now number 8, SC, dropping 3 spots after that close game to ASU against 3-1, now unranked Colorado Trojans by 21.5.
Oh man, these guys that set these lines are real tricksters.
Real jerks.
Is the only thing I gotta say. Here's the deal: I think Colorado got really beat up in this last game, and I think the Trojans are fired up. There was quite a bit of disparity around the line sizes. The offensive linemen of Oregon compared to Colorado's defensive line. I think Oregon's offensive linemen outweighed them by like 20 pounds a person. It's not as big with SC. I still think SC's going to roll. I think they're going to bounce back after that lackluster ASU performance. I'm taking USC to cover those points.
Oh, wow. How say you?
I just apparently refuse to learn the lessons that I've been hard pressed to have forced down my throat over the last several years picking with you guys, and these huge spreads, just stay away. I am going back to Colorado here. I think this is just a little bit too big at home at altitude. I'm sticking with Coach Prime. Cover 21.5.
I'm going to be with you on that. I think Colorado to cover this. I think it would bait me into it in the mid-20s or maybe high 20s. But I think Colorado altitude at home, weird time too. I think this could end up being a little bit more of a lower scoring game with that 10 a.m. local, 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff. Yep. This is a tough one. I'll take Colorado on this. At noon on Pac-12 Network, it is 1-3 ASU at 2-2 Cal. Cal by 12.5 at home. You don't have to watch the game, but you do have to make a pick.
Oh, woof.
Yeah, totally. I'm going with Cal.
Oh, yuck. This is like a stadium fire and cancel the game type of game. Like, who wants to watch this? I guess give me the Devils.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Devils on this one as well. I liked what I saw about that backup quarterback coming in, the moxie that they showed against USC. And I don't know, I may be recency bias, but I was actually in the stands, like most of us, for that Cal game. And they look like a bunch of turds. So I'm going to give me ASU on this one in a close game. 12.5 is too much. I don't see Cal covering that against anybody in the pack. 3:30, it's number 9 Oregon at 1-3 Stanford. The Ducks by a place that had given them the bugaboo way back in the day. I don't know about this one. Ducks by 27.
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's going to be a lot of warm Chardonnay in that stadium by the fourth quarter. Are they going to cover 27, though? That's a lot. I think, you know what? Law Dog, I love your perspective, but I'm going to zig while you zag. I'm going to take Oregon to cover the 27.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon looks like a juggernaut offensively. I think it's easy to kind of look at them, and especially look at Stanford and just look at how piss poor that they have been. I'm just 27. I'm just going to take the points and hold on for dear life.
Yeah, I'd love to take the other side of this one because, you know, Stanford showed us something last week. You know, they did, I think, with a close game at home. And this is our second game at home. You know what? Screw you guys. Give me Stanford. Give me the men of Stanford to cover this.
Oregon-Stanford games just get weird. They get weird. It's in their head. It's in the Ducks' head. They do not like this game. And plus, they've got the same look ahead that we've got going on. They're looking ahead to that bye week. They want a piece of us. They don't want to be going down to Stanford in like 4-inch grass.
All right, that's it, gentlemen. So we got a big road trip this week to Tucson. Can the Dogs go down there and claim what is rightfully theirs? A big win the last time, hopefully in a long time, that we touched ground in Tucson. Can I get a go, Dogs?
Go, Dogs.
Go, Dogs.
Nope. Oof. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.